Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who finally let the Hungy cat out of the bag. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. I spent about $70 in candy this week.
And,
sick. Oh, it's very sick. My blood sugar is probably not very good, but let me tell you, I am happy.
It's always a trade-off, right? Blood sugar versus happiness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They had gummies that looked like sunny side up eggs, which was really cool. Chocolate covered gummy bears are shockingly great, by the way. High recommend those if you ever find them. And chocolate covered potato chips are reminiscent of Kit Kats.
Oh, those are good. Those are good. Yeah. I had some a couple years ago and they were tasty. And then I realized I should never buy those again. So,
you know. Why buy them when you can make them?
Oh, true. It was really far more of a, it's too dangerous for my health to have these in the house.
So. Dude, you could pound those things like crazy.
No, that They're was the awesome. Problem. You have identified the issue.
Well, perfect. We have a few things to talk about, including a historic all-out pay-per-view for a couple of different reasons. And kind of looping that in with the direction of the company. And I think that's where we need to start, Fred, is the direction of the company. And the top story continues to be the television deal, or lack thereof. We've been told, hey, it's on the goal line. I can't remember who it is, but said, no, it's in the end zone. This thing's pretty much a done deal. And we just keep hearing that a deal is imminent. But this latest twist, Fred, is a wild one. I'm sure everybody knows it by now, that multiple sources, including Dave Meltzer and Andrew Zarian and others, have hinted that there could be a deal with Fox.
Yes.
So the
reporting seems to be, though, it's very, you know, when Meltzer, I mean, Zarian was outright like hinting at it. But when Meltzer in particular likes to do his, I'm not going to say it outright, but if you have a degree in reading Dave Meltzer, you will know what I'm saying. It certainly seems like that they are going to split their media property this time. There was recently in the past week a copyright, I believe it was, or trademark, one or the other, filed for Shockwave for AEW, leading to speculation that's the name of a new show. You know, now we have both Zarian and Meltzer in their own way hinting that, you know, it's going to be a deal with Fox and Turner, or Warner Brothers Discovery, I should say, with some shows remaining on Warner Brothers Discovery, and Shockwave likely being the Fox network. Now, it is expected, I think, that instead of actual Fox, it's going to be FS1, which makes a lot of sense. If this is a big if, and I don't expect it to happen, but I would say that if they do end up on actual broadcast Fox, that would be kind of funny after, you know, WWE leaving Fox and, you know, AEW then taking that spot, essentially. But yeah, I guess we got to see what's going to happen, and we're still just in this holding pattern. And, you know, we're not going to, it's not, I can't believe that this would get leaked to, like, Sean Ross Sapp or Meltzer or insert anyone here to as the form of releasing the information. This is going to be a something that goes out to Variety or, you know, some other major actual news medium rather than, you know, insert wrestling coverage site here. So, because this is too big of a deal. So we'll see. We're still in hurry up and wait mode. You know, and fingers crossed we actually get the announcement at some point in time so we can stop having this conversation of, well, there's supposed to be a TV deal, we just don't have details on it. So I've heard some speculation, and it's just speculation, but it's like logical speculation at least, so congrats to those people, but that it may be announced closer to the 5th anniversary of Dynamite, which is coming up, which is ridiculous. And yeah, so hopefully we could just get some word on it soon. But you know, I think that they're going to make a good chunk of money. They'll be profitable, one would expect, especially with it getting split between two media companies, and onward and upward, I guess, for AEW.
Man, I hope it's on Fox proper.
It would be funny. It would be a little funny.
Well, let's look at it from a couple different ways, okay? Fox paid WWE for SmackDown $200 million. Mm-hmm. Their expectations were that they were going to get between 3 to 4 million viewers weekly. They got 4.1 the first week. I think the second week they dropped all the way to 2.4. Now, it's not crazy to see that kind of a drop from week one to week two, especially because people want to see it for the novelty. They want to kind of, hey, what's going on? Dynamite went from 1.5 to 1.1 million, which is a similar drop to what SmackDown had. The difference between Dynamite and SmackDown, Dynamite was a completely new property. SmackDown was just moving networks. But even so, there is an element of intrigue when you're going to a new network. They focus that show around The Rock. And honestly, I think you can say that The Rock was the reason why that they had such a good rating on that debut episode 5 years ago. Yeah. They're also paying $200 million for something that they expected to do monster ratings. Now, they did good ratings for a time slot.
It just wasn't profitable ratings.
No.
For what they were paying for it.
That's the big thing. It wasn't profitable. It wasn't something where, hey, we're paying you $200 million a year. We're expecting, you know, to be able to sell ad rates for like 3 to 4 million viewers. And they just did not do that. The peak Bloodline stuff, I think they got to 2.8 million viewers one time.
Yeah.
And
right. I don't know offhand, but I'll trust you on it.
Outside of that, they floated between 1.8 and 2.4. Kind of like it really depended on where you were at in the cycle of SmackDown, because it did dip quite a bit for a short period of time. But then when the Bloodline stuff really picked up, when Sami Zayn got involved, then you really saw ratings start to trend upward, and they kind of leveled off around like 2.2. But even so, 2.2 million is nowhere near what SmackDown thought they were getting for the property. And quite frankly, it's cheaper to add a game of college football in that slot than it would be for professional wrestling on a year-round basis. And that's kind of where we're at. But if you're giving $200 million to WWE SmackDown, considering the history that WWE has, considering the cachet and the notoriety that the company has, why can't AEW get $50 million for one show, 2 hours? Like, that's kind of what we're talking about. And you know what? An AEW show on Fox proper, I think, could draw a million viewers.
Yeah, but that would be looked down upon. That would be looked as a terrible rating for Fox, I think, even on a Friday night.
Sure. You know what? I think that's it's a very fair statement. But let's say they get 1.5 million because they're on network television.
Yeah.
Every single household in the United States of America can get Fox. Like, and that's something like with the CW. Every single household can get NXT now. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one. Now, if AEW gets a show on Fox proper, like NXT got $50 million. Why can't an AEW show get that same amount? And you know what? Even if it's on FS1, they're probably going to still get around $50 million for one show, because I think $200 million for the entirety of what AEW offers, if you were to like price it out, I think $200 million is pretty fair considering where they're at in their life cycle and the television market as a whole, because you're getting, there's Rampage, there's Dynamite, there's Collision, this Shockwave program, which could be AEW or AEW ROH. We're not 100% sure on how that's going to play out, but I love the Shockwave name. I think it really fits the motif of what this promotion is. And then you also have the pay-per-view and potential back catalog. I don't know. I think the back catalog should go on Max, and I hope they get that up there. I have no memory of that Omega Pack 30-minute Iron Man match. I remember watching it, remember loving it, couldn't tell you a damn thing about it. I want to go rewatch it. Like, that kind of stuff would be so cool to go look back on, like, in history, because 5 years is a long enough time where you can actually start having some of these conversations and talking about the historical impact of some of these shows. Like, it'd be cool to be able to go back and watch it. I think, you know, this is just speculation, just me kind of thinking out loud, I think there's going to be some form of streaming element like that involved with this deal, where WWE can dump the entire WWE network on Peacock for $200 million. That makes sense. WWE is a much more established brand with a significantly larger tape library. And yes, I'm very intrigued to see where this goes. But if they get on Fox and replace SmackDown, even if it's on FS1, you can spin that in. Yeah, they dumped SmackDown for our programming. Hell yeah. That's a big PR win for AEW. And heck, you're already seeing the Chris LaGentle PR machine trying to shoot down anything positive with a potential AEW move to Fox. And let me tell you, WWE, we don't like them, but God, their PR is so good.
Oh yeah.
It's tremendous. And you know what? I got to tip them the metaphorical cap. They do a fantastic job, and I hope AEW figures it out soon, because they are getting just bombarded by their good PR, and WWE just hasn't had a counter yet.
Yeah, it's a tough situation that AEW finds themselves in, but honestly, to a little extent, they don't have anyone to blame but themselves. They just don't play the game the same way, and you can, you know, I wonder if that's partially like Tony Khan trying to, you know, hold his nose or whatever to refuse to play the dirty tactics game so much. But I don't know, like, the problem with this extended negotiation, and you know, I don't know that it would necessarily, you know, change if they announced everything or if they're leaking details to the press, but the way things work is the grifters and the bad faith accounts and etc. are more than happy to just say whatever, even if, you know, like that one guy for the Blaze, the highly conservative online news network that previously did coverage of MMA, you know, according to someone on Reddit, on the AEW subreddit. But basically, it sure seemed like he got info from WWE, from TKO, that was favorable to them and not to AEW, regardless of how accurate it was. And he was all too happy to drop that information. And, you know, that's just the game that's going to be played. So I don't know. I do think it's had an effect on AEW. I think that it's hurt the popularity of the company to some extent. And so far, they haven't had an answer to it. So
I think the lack of PR has destroyed the company that we love. And I think you can point out to how social media has destroyed it, because for better or worse, Tony Khan is extremely online. He is one of us. He just happens to be a multi-billionaire. Mm-hmm. He is a wrestling dork. And yeah, I mean that in a very complimentary way. He has the resources to be able to do a lot of this stuff. And he loves posting. He is a poster. You can never outpost a poster. But what you can do is out-PR the poster. Because what Twitter does is you have such a fan base of WWE that they kind of dominate the algorithm. And because they dominate the algorithm, if they say something negative about the company, even if it's wrong, everybody believes it anyways. You have to have PR helping you out on social media with some of these accounts. You have to be able to do it outside of just Tony Khan posting matches. There are ways to be really good about PR on Twitter, and Twitter does impact things, but man, it could be done so much better. And I wish that they would have figured it out. I do. They just haven't, Fred.
No, they haven't. It's a shortcoming, I think, really. But yeah, that's where we are, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. Yeah, we'll see on the TV deal, and it certainly sounds like a guaranteed thing at this point. It's just a question of the timetable on it. So we're gonna keep in this holding pattern we're in right now.
Yeah. I just want this TV deal to be done.
It's getting a little tiring to have to say that, oh, it's coming. They're saying it's coming thing every week. But yeah, we do have the new detail with Fox being involved. So that is a plus.
Yeah. Other news, though. Let's talk about Grand Slam and Wrestle Dream. Grand Slam is two weeks from this past Wednesday on the 25th. Of September. And you know what? I think this is the first year. Maybe I'm wrong. Have there always been two Dynamites between Grand Slam and All Out? Or am I just misremembering? Because I feel like this is longer process to get to Grand Slam. But what really stinks is I don't really feel like there's enough set up. You did get a tag team title match, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. And there's still kind of the, I don't know what the right phrasing is, the elephant in the room with the world title match. It just feels like there's so much still up in the air, even though they're trying to like get it really built up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I don't think ticket sales have gone up. We heard from some people who live in the New York market that discounts have already been sent out to people who have previously bought tickets. I don't know what those discounts are, if they're buy one, get one free, buy one, get one 50% off. We're going to try and get as many people in the building, and that's a great way to do so. But it stinks that we're at the point with Grand Slam that you have to do that, because the first one sold out and sold out pretty quickly. Second one, you got like 13,000, which is a very respectable number still in that building. Then just over 10 last year. Now they're probably not even going to get to 8.
What I thought was very interesting is 2022 Grand Slam, as you mentioned, had over 13,000. Tickets distributed was 13,321. 2023, I couldn't actually easily find a number from the WrestleTix account except for on July 28th. They had posted for that September 20th, 2023 Grand Slam that 4,529 tickets have been distributed, again by late July. The most recent update on Twitter from WrestleTix for this year's Grand Slam is from yesterday. And they have distributed 4,400 tickets. So they are actually below, I think. Yeah, slightly below by 100. The number of tickets distributed last year on July. So, and they are at that point yesterday.
These diminishing returns on return shows are a little bit concerning for AEW. Yeah. Where I think that the novelty of running a place like Arthur Ashe is so damn cool, man. Like,
oh yeah, it's a cool idea. Yeah.
I wish that they would have really continued to run venues like that. Like Daly's Place is probably still my favorite AEW venue because it's a legit amphitheater meant for like theater productions. It's meant for orchestral concerts. It's not meant for like sports, which makes it really unique and cool. The final Nitro, I still think is one of the coolest venues I've ever seen for pro wrestling because it was like spring break, but it felt like an actual venue instead of just setting up on the beach. Like that kind of stuff rules in pro wrestling. And I wish like, this is where the whole PR element of Twitter, I think really comes into play because I think Twitter has bullied AEW and Tony Khan out of doing some of these cool ideas that really make them an alternative because it's not major league. Like you need to have all these LED boards and these big screen displays. Right. No, lights you don't need to have that. Go to cool places, man. Like, you know, it'd be sick. Even if you could, I don't even know if legally you could do something in the Colosseum in Greece. Go do a Dynamite at the Colosseum in Greece, man. Like, I don't care if you can only get like 600 people in there. Do you know how cool that would be? Like, no display boards, no nothing. You are wrestling in the Colosseum. How sick that would be. Like, do cool things like that. And I think Twitter has honestly bullied Tony Khan out of doing that stuff. And it sucks.
Yeah. I would be so happy if Shockwave just spent like 6 months or a year or whatever at Daly's Place.
Like, yeah,
that would just be cool as hell, I think. But yeah, so for this Grand Slam, we have three matches announced as of right now, and I'm going to bury one, and I'm not going to be able to help myself because we haven't talked about the pay-per-view, obviously. But so, okay, so we had Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay win the title shot against the Young Bucks on this past Wednesday's Dynamite. We also announced that Darby Allin is going to put his world title match on the line against Jon Moxley. That's all fine. You know, those both sound good, and we'll get into those exact angles and everything here in a little bit. But Bryan Danielson has been challenged, and I guess it has been officially announced, I don't know, by Nigel McGuinness, which in a vacuum is by itself fine. I mean, Nigel's been working this angle for a year. It's, you know, it's a good angle, but you know, literally announced like 20 minutes or something after Darby Allin agreed to put his title match on the line because he didn't have a world title match that night against Bryan Danielson. And then we just turn around and announce that Bryan Danielson is wrestling on the night that he was supposedly unavailable. So Darby looks like a goof. It doesn't really make any sense for, you know, with regards to Danielson. Now, I did wonder if they're going to do an angle where next week, you know, Nigel is told that obviously Danielson can't wrestle, but why would they go ahead and announce the match like they did? I don't know. It's all kind of odd. Doesn't make a lot of logical sense. And you know, I don't know. It just seems like a big old shortcoming to me, but.
So here's why I think it's fine. And I think everything you said is 100% fair and valid. It seems kind of weird, but Nigel coming out and challenging Bryan Danielson for a match is perfect because Danielson just got suffocated with a fucking plastic bag from Cub Foods.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about a guy who makes fun of Bryan Danielson, calls him a coward constantly, calls him, what is it, a clam digger?
Clam digger, yeah.
And then he goes out and, at, like a coward, challenges him to a match when he suffocated.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's perfect pro wrestling. And you know what? If I have to live with the fact that Darby Allin looks like a little bit of a goof because of this, this also fits the motif of Darby Allin's character, where Moxley is kind of challenging him for this title shot. Darby's going to take it because he's a white meat baby face. And I can live with some of the other elements because I thought a lot of it worked really, really well. If it's anyone other than Nigel McGuinness, I'm probably punting this. But as you said, Nigel's been building this up for a year. He's been calling Danielson a coward incessantly. And now he's pulling the biggest act of cowardice, trying to challenge him to a match after he was suffocated with a plastic bag. That's awesome stuff. I loved it. I think it only worked because of that.
That's fair. I think that, you know, the timing was really off between the two angles, and I don't know how you could do them both on the same show, especially in the order they did. But I
think that's part of it, where Nigel kind of makes this challenge out of nowhere. You can make the kayfabe argument that, oh, Darby's not challenging for the title at this show. Now's my chance. Now's my chance to, like, try and get the title, like without really having to do much, because Danielson just got suffocated with the plastic bag. He's probably going to be at his weakest point. I just got back in the ring and I'm feeling good. Now is my chance to capitalize. This is almost like cashing in, but you have a year's worth of story to back it up. So timing wise, I actually think it's better this way, because it fits what Nigel McGuinness's character in this whole storyline has been. I think if you do that with other wrestlers, Fred, I'm with you. It doesn't make sense. I do think
my biggest complaint isn't with Nigel specifically. It's actually with the treatment of Darby, I think, is the bigger weakness here. It makes sense for Nigel to be chicken shit like this. But Darby should be, you know, you would think that if he's going to be putting his thing, his, you know, his title match on the line like this, you'd think that Danielson would be out. But, you know, apparently he's going to wrestle.
But that's the thing. He's a white meat baby face. Like, if you have a white meat baby face like that, who's kind of got challenged in this vein, like, it makes sense for Darby at the end, because it's Darby.
Yeah.
That, I think it doesn't make him look like a geek, because it's Darby. Darby is that kind of guy. He was that kind of TNT champion where he wanted to just face all comers. I just think it works.
Fair enough.
And yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. I just think it works.
Okay. Anything else in the news you want to talk about, or
where are we at for WrestleDream ticket sales?
Oh boy. Let me check.
Because that's the next pay-per-view, and there are already so many people whining about the violence in the last pay-per-view. I'm like, man, maybe AEW just needs to really establish that you're going to see a lot of violence on these pay-per-views, and maybe you shouldn't let your kids watch them. But the TV show is not going to have that level of violence, where you're like seeing somebody get suffocated with a plastic bag. That could freak out a kid.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's also pay-per-view. So if you really draw that line and establish it, I don't really see an issue with the potential of, like, you know, kids watching per se.
Yeah.
But you got to establish that line.
I'll also point out,
I feel like they have with lights out matches, but they have them so infrequently that I think people forget.
It's been a while since the last one. So.
Yeah.
I will point out that the time that WWE was most popular with kids was not during one of their, like, let's aim right at kids eras. It was during the Attitude Era. So, you know, I think that that's something to consider. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of, you know, outrage that's really going to affect things for AEW. I'm not dismissing the concerns out of hand. I'm just saying that, like, I don't see it, you know, being a major issue for them at the present. I will say that Mercedes Moné didn't help things any by giving oxygen to it the way she did, but yeah, what can you do? I just think you know, it's really down to parental responsibility and all that stuff. And you know, hopefully, yeah, I think that they pushed the line, but I don't think they crossed the line, you know, if that makes any sense.
I got you. Did you find those numbers for Wrestle Dream tickets?
I did, actually. Let's see here. I got, looks like as of September 6th, we got an update from WrestleTix that Wrestle Dream is currently set up for just over 6,000 seats, and 4,600 tickets have been distributed. Let's see if
now, I can. The Tacoma Dome, I don't think seats that many. Now, it's called a dome, but it's not like the Tokyo Dome where it's set up for baseball. The Tacoma Dome, I believe, is like a smaller basketball venue.
Yeah, I think the biggest attendance they've had for a wrestling event appears to be 1999's WCW Spring Stampede, which had 17,690 in there.
It is relatively big then.
Yeah, WWE, their top attendance there was 6,000 for the 2019 Stomping Grounds event.
I have always said WCW is better than WWE.
Yeah, it's just scientific right there. Stop the count. So, you know, that's where it is. Last year, looks like they got to roughly 6,400 before the final count. So they aren't doing too bad this year, comparably, I don't think. I mean, they're going to finish lower, but it's not like disgustingly lower, if that makes any sense. And they got 36 days till the show, so I think that they'll probably top 5,000 and maybe 5,500. But yeah,
plus you're probably gonna have a title defense from Bryan Danielson,
which should help, one would hope. But the way drawing has worked for them recently, who knows? So
let's get to.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I guess I'll jump the line a little bit. I went to Dynamite This Week Live. Got a nice little floor seat off of StubHub on the cheap. So, and I will say that Rupp Arena seats about, I want to say, 22,000 for an event like this. And they ended up with, I believe it was 2,500 for WrestleTix for this Dynamite. And, 2,791 as of Wednesday afternoon. So that is a basketball arena for a basketball event, they get about 20,500. So I don't know, man. That was a little the crowd was good, I will say, but it was a rough look if you're in person, because the hard cam side is completely empty, really, outside of a couple people. And but you know, they filled it up decently, and the crowd that was there was very much into it. So
I wonder if they got a really good deal because it's a college stadium that doesn't get a ton of traffic outside of basketball season.
Maybe, I don't know.
I know it's a bigger venue, but there's got to be some explanation. They're running Rupp Arena and only getting a few thousand people in there. Otherwise, it doesn't make fiscal sense.
Now, I will say that there's not really a good alternative in town, especially there's another arena that is Memorial. Coliseum is smaller by quite a bit. It's 8,500, but I believe it's currently closed for renovation. So I think it's causing everything else to be shifted over. Now that is definitely looked at as the, you know, to slip into Dave Meltzer parlance, it would be looked at as the B building, you know, the weaker one of the city here. But you know, Christ, it looked better. You know, it would certainly not feel quite so, you know, Tampa Bay Rays attendance like. But I don't know, man. This has been an ongoing issue. We actually talked about, I think, either on the last episode or the one before, about how it's AEW's attendance is brutal, and they haven't really done much about that. So
Run smaller venues.
It would be nice. It would be nice, but
you'll feel more major league if you run a smaller venue and it's packed with screaming fans.
Yes, that's for sure.
You don't have to run like a 1,000-seat venue. Run like a 5,000 or 6,000-seat venue.
Like this would 100% be more in line, I think, with what one should reasonably expect. But
minor league hockey facilities are really good for this. Like the Fargo has a hockey team in the USHL called the Fargo Force. That stadium seats around 6,000. That's like a perfect mid-sized venue for them to use right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying go to Fargo, but that's the kind of venue you should be using because it's big enough, but it's also not going to cost you a fortune because it's only like 6,000.
Yeah.
That's what we should be seeing, but we're not. And we'll see what that continues like. A couple more news things before we get into All Out and Fred being at Dynamite. I've tried to see him on the camera. I have not, unfortunately. Meltzer says Daniel Garcia still hasn't signed. That's the only update. No really lean one way or the other. But at this point, it's kind of concerning. Griffin Peltier, who does a phenomenal job covering Lucha and schedule stuff for the site, mentioned that he was taken off and replaced on promotional posters starting in like late October, which I think is when his deal expires. Mm. So I don't know if AEW is trying to get ahead of, we just don't know, or if they know something. But let me tell you, the longer this goes on, the worse I feel about him possibly staying, even though Tony Khan said at the presser, like, hey, it's, yeah, like we're just letting him clear his head. Well, if you let him clear his head too much, he may clear it and be like, oh, bye AEW, I'll take WWE. Like,
yeah,
I'm getting uncomfortable.
Hopefully, I would love to see him stay in AEW. Obviously, I think he could be he looks like he's being set up to be like a legit main eventer in the next year or two. On that kind of Swerve Strickland early 2023 path. They just need to lock him down, and it's going to be a tough one if he does bounce. Hopefully it doesn't happen like that for AEW's sake and for my enjoyment of watching him, because, you know, he'd probably go to NXT and then, you know, get stuck in NXT stuff that I don't enjoy that much personally. But he's a tremendously talented guy, and he needs to get paid. So I hope he gets paid well. So
I hope he does too, and I hope he stays in a company that where I actually want to watch him.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We will see. All right. Couple of really quick hitters, then we got to get to this pay-per-view, because let me tell you, this pay-per-view is tremendous. Adam Cole is backstage at All Out. What does that mean? Who the hell knows? It's also interesting that MJF is likely out filming a movie after All Out. So, and then Bronson Boulder may have been hurt in Lexington. We're going to blame that on Fred.
We're sorry. And
yeah, Fred just getting people hurt. It's,
we exchanged words, and it wasn't pleasant, and then I took him out.
Look at that. Fred admitting to assault on camera. Yep. I can't believe it. Yeah.
Very believable.
Fred, we have not talked about the show much at all. I gave you a couple of my thoughts as I was watching it, because I watched it. I watched the main event live. I watched everything else like on Monday, because Sundays, I'm sorry, there is no time for me to watch.
Oh, yeah. Anything. No, that makes 100% sense.
And I was actually at a demo derby Saturday night. Shout out to Sean.
Hell yeah.
Look, I had never been to a demo derby. It was fun. Like,
I've never gone, actually. I need to, just because it'd be perfect.
Oh, dude, it was great. It was great. You know what we
did? Did I tell you that on our anniversary this year, me and Nicole accidentally got our photo taken in front of Bigfoot? Or, I'm sorry, Gravedigger. It was great, dude.
Oh, that rocks.
We were just...
How many years have you guys been married?
Long enough. I'm kayfabe in some personal info. I mean, I've already told people where I live. So we went out to dinner, and we're on our way back home, and we drive past the local Walmart, and there's a damn monster truck in front of it. And I'm like, is that Gravedigger? So we go over, we park, and it's they got a thing set up for Gravedigger and the whole Monster Jam tour and all that stuff. And we were like, yeah, we gotta get our picture taken in front of it. That's that matches us pretty much perfectly. So anyways, I digress.
All right, Fred.
Gravedigger Jones over here.
Gravedigger Jones. Let's talk about this pay-per-view. Did you watch the pre-show?
I did not at all. And I honestly, looking at that list on paper, no regrets.
Yeah,
that's 100% a punt list right there. So
I did not watch the pre-show either. Mainly because I was watching a demo derby, which I'm okay
with. I would bet that demo derby was a better match than at least two, if not all three matches on this pre-show.
Yeah. Let me tell you, that demo derby rocked. Heats or whatever, because they have like different it's almost like pro wrestling. No, sorry, mm-hmm. I mean amateur wrestling, where you have different weight classes, they have different car classes.
Oh, interesting.
One of the classes, the final two, was a boyfriend girlfriend.
Hell yeah.
It was awesome. The girl won. Yes. And I think she actually launched his car up into the barrier, because it was like like cement barriers or whatever. It was like built up like dirt, and got his car so he couldn't even move it. It was freaking sweet.
Was it better than the John Morrison Taya Valkyrie do the dishes match?
Oh, the do the dishes match. Oh, I can't
remember. Whatever indie show that was.
No, dude, that was TNA, wasn't it?
That was a WrestleMania weekend. Yeah, like a year ago or something. That was not very good at all. It's one of the worst matches I saw. Yeah, anyways. So this show ruled. I don't know how deep you want to get into it, because I know you are a busy man. But I liked a lot of the show. There were a couple parts that I thought were kind of weak. Mainly the women's match. But why don't you guide the discussion on this?
I think at this point, everybody's heard a lot of the nuts and bolts from the show. I kind of want to talk big picture stuff. One of the things I really want to talk about is, let's just start with the angle. John Moxley coming down and choking out Bryan Danielson with a grocery bag. Fucking phenomenal. They got every part of this right. Christian coming down to do the cash in. Then you have John Moxley like running him off, and Wheeler Yuta's there. So is Claudio Castagnoli and Pac. Pac is the only one still in his wrestling gear, which is just the best gimmick of all time.
Yes.
And Danielson's like, ha ha, suck it. And then they do the hand raise thing, and then Claudio uppercuts him. But
yeah,
the best part about this was Danielson's reaction. Like, what?
Yeah.
Just shock.
He didn't sell the move so much as the shock, which I thought was good.
It was good. And then Moxley gets the bag out and starts suffocating him. And Pac just holds Yuta, and Yuta sells it beautifully.
Yeah,
not understanding what was happening, not realizing that this was going to happen. He feels betrayed, but he can't do anything. And look, Marina Shafir in this gimmick, I hope they never let her wrestle, because fucking great. She's just throwing dudes around. Killed and she looks Commander. Like she looks like the toughest person in the world. Like, it's great. They found the perfect way to use Marina Shafir.
Yeah.
She is muscle for guys who don't need muscle. She's just extra.
Yeah. Extra muscle. Just deflects.
It was so perfectly done. But they carried him out without a stretcher. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of loved it.
Immediately after Excalibur said they have the best medical team. They cut over to Danielson being like helped out, but not stretchered out.
Just,
I don't know.
And the angle was perfect. The match was disappointing. We talked
it
wasn't a lot.
Great. It was definitely not. It's not going on the all-time great list, you know.
I thought it was a 4-star match. It was perfectly competent. Yeah, I think that's where competent. It
was. Let me find my.
It was competent. Rating. It was fine, but this was a spot for Jack Perry to go out there and have a match with one of the greatest wrestlers that's ever lived for the world title and show that you are something. Show that you're ready for this spot. And I don't know how much of it is just he's just not 100% ready with this gimmick or what, but he didn't deliver the way you would have wanted him to.
I would have to say they didn't have a bad performance, but I don't think he had a great performance either.
It existed.
Like, he was good. You know, I mean, it was a 4-star match, but it was with Danielson, you know, and that's kind of when you're having a 4-star match with Danielson in a pay-per-view semi-main, I guess I should say.
That's dog shit.
Yeah, it's rough. It's not great. I mean, the only singles matches I have as worse for him, for Danielson this year, is Yuji Nagata on that January collision for 3¾, and against Satnam Singh for 3 stars. And that's it. So,
yeah,
when your upside comparisons are like 55-year-old Yuji Nagata and Satnam Singh, you know. Oof.
Yeah, they could have done so much more, but it just didn't happen. And this company's going to be built around Jungle Boy, Jack Perry. It's going to be. Tony loves this dude.
Yeah.
And I've loved the scapegoat up until now, but I'm really disappointed with this match because this was a statement kind of match and he didn't deliver.
Yeah. I will say that I think his character work is top level stuff right now, or high level, I should say. Maybe not top level, but I thought that match was a bit of a letdown. And I also thought the Leo Rush match, granted they were given limited time, it was like 8 minutes, but you know, and I still liked it, but I was hoping for a little more from Perry on that one too. So
yeah. And let's kind of move on, because there's a couple things that I still want to talk about. Let's talk about the main event. The main event has a weird dichotomy. Here's why. You can't have this this match does not make sense unless you have the Texas Death Match. And it was significantly worse. I wouldn't say worse. It never peaked as high as the Texas Death Match.
Yeah.
This was more methodical. They did we're going to do a bunch of spots and try and kill each other. This was, I'm going to think about it. And I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And it was much more well thought out, well built in that sense, where they may have gone from spot to spot, but they were trying to think of ways. Well, like Swerve choked this guy out with the chain. Well, he can't do that here because you can't drape him off the side of a cage.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to do that. So they had to think of different ways. And Hangman doing like the chair shot and the hyperbaric needle, I thought was a tremendous way to finish the match. And they didn't show you the chair shot, which I thought was tremendous production.
It was interesting. Very interesting.
For a company that kind of sucks at production.
They do have more than their fair share of miscues, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. And you look at all these other factors. I thought this match was very, very well done from that standpoint. They were very meticulous on killing each other. And I thought it worked great for the story. I thought they delivered. like the cinder block spot was awesome. And I hope nobody does it again.
Yeah.
Oh,
brutal. My absolutely brutal.
God, that was like, kudos to these guys for doing all of this stuff. 100% major kudos. You guys are psychos.
Don't do it. Never do that again.
Please don't do it again. But it was, that's why it worked for me. I gave it, I can't remember. I might have gone 5 on it. I did go 5.
I went 4.
It wasn't as good as the Texas Death Match. But the reason why this match was structured the way it was is because of the Texas Death Match. And I think that context needs to be given to this match, because otherwise you can just say, oh, it was worse. Well, why? Why? The why makes sense. And the why is why this match was so good. It's so different. I thought I loved it. I wish it would have been a little bit more like the Texas Death Match. I'll be honest, I wanted a repeat of the Texas Death Match. That match was so fucking good.
Oh, yeah. That was a masterpiece.
If it weren't for the Okada, or sorry, the Omega Osprey matches, that's my match of the year without a question in my mind. But this was great. This was tremendous. And now you get to continue the story at some point when Swerve comes back, because he hasn't beaten him officially.
Yep.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I think that they had to have Paige win for that reason, but I honestly would have preferred to see Swerve win it just to keep Paige as the extremely frustrated, going insane guy. Now, they're clearly, he's still going to be very frustrated and, you know, going insane, but great angle on Wednesday, by the way, with Paige and Jeff Jarrett. I think considering that they probably didn't want him to lose to Swerve 3 times in a row, you know, this went as a finish went about as well as it could have. This may be a weird take. I don't know. It's not, it's just something I just kind of thought of. Do you think they did the hypodermic needle spot too early or too late in the match, I should say?
No, I loved it. No? I loved it. Okay. It was almost like, I think it helps tell the story about the torn hangman, because in my brain, that's Novocaine.
Yeah.
That's a painkiller, a nerve blocker. And then he tries killing him. I think it worked really well at the end of the match. I also think if you're going to pull out a needle, you got to pull it out when the other guy's super weak. You can't pull it out early.
Okay.
Now, you might be able to do that in the Weapons Rumble in DDT, which I still remember the third weapon they brought out was one guy got their blood drawn in the middle of the ring, which is still one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in wrestling. But I think that's why it worked. Because it was like Hangman subliminally knowing that he really shouldn't do this, so he tried to ease the pain a little bit, even though he knew he was trying to kill him.
Is that what the story was? With the announcers, or is that just headcanon for you?
I think it's just headcanon for me. I don't remember what the announcer said after the match, but that's kind of how I perceived it.
Okay.
Where Hangman's just this tortured soul. And I think Jeff Jarrett highlighted it, and I hope we get that Jarrett Page match, which would be tremendous. Where he's like, my family's been promoting wrestling for decades. I've seen guys go to the lengths you went, and they always ended it with some form of regret. And when Hangman was walking backstage, everybody was like, even Dark Order's like, we don't know you anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that needle with the chair shot continues that motif of Hangman not even knowing who he is, but still the good person in him is still there.
Yeah. Another thing I want to mention from the All Out. Willow and Stat, my God. Long live the AEW Women's Deathmatch Division.
I popped.
Always delivers so every hard, single time. Fred.
I popped so hard when I saw Willow in those long braids.
Yeah.
I'm like, this woman's ready to kill. And oh, it was awesome. I wish Stat had done something similar. She just came out in her normal gear. It actually looked like new gear. I wish she would have, like, I always talk about Street Fight. Shawn Michaels 2002 SummerSlam. Everybody should come out in that kind of gear.
Yeah.
The basic, I don't know what the proper way to call that tank top is, because the only way I've ever heard it is a wife beater, and I don't think that that's appropriate, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think that term has fallen out of favor yet.
Yeah.
I don't know and if it's really a better one for it.
That's the problem, but you know which one I'm talking about. And Levi's.
Yeah.
And I think he was wearing cowboy boots. Like, he just came out to fight.
Yeah.
No wrestling gear. No thinking, just I'm going to fight. And that's kind of what Willow did. She wore like a basic top, like comfortable pants, and braided her hair. So, hey, we're not going to get my hair caught in a bunch of stuff. I'm coming out here. She looked like a UFC fighter, because UFC fighters braid their hair like that all the time. Do the cornrows, because then it doesn't get caught up. It eliminates a factor in the match. And I thought it was great. I really did. I went 4.5, Fred.
I think I did too. That match ruled. It was just a blast. Just an absolute blast.
The finish, man. Oh, the finish.
It looks like I went 4.25, so.
Yeah, you hated it. How dare you?
Terrible match. 3 4.25s on that show, by the way. I really like the Young Bucks tag match. And I like Garcia MJF at that level. So those were 4.25s.
Did you go 5 on Osprey Pac?
I went, those of you who this offends, cover your ears, but I went 5.25 on it.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
That's probably my number 4 match on the year, I think.
Oh, let's count up my 5-star matches for the year. I'm at 8.
I am at 7, so.
My 5-star matches, Jon Moxley versus Shingo Takagi from 113, the War Dogs cage match with United Empire, Eddie Kingston, Brian Danielson, Ospreay Takeshita, Sting retirement match, Ospreay Danielson, Swerve Hangman. What a great year for pro wrestling.
It really is. It really is. I'm just now about halfway through the G1. I don't know if anything's going to hit the 5 level, but I just watched Shingo and Zack Sabre Jr. and that was like a really good 4.5. So I'll take it. Anything else you want to talk about off of this pay-per-view? Because I got one more thing that I'll mention real quick. And then
I've got one thing too, but I'll let you go first.
Okay. Mercedes Moné needs to step it up.
Is the greatest women's wrestler in American history. She hasn't shown it once in this company.
Not in AEW. Let's go to Fred's spreadsheet. It is a cool thing. All right. So the best match she's had was the Willow one on Double or Nothing. And as good as Willow has been this year, like, when do we start, you know, questioning if Willow is just better? I went 4.25 on that one. I gave Moné 4 for her Zeuxis match and her Stephanie Vaquer match at Forbidden Door.
And then, Vaquer outshined her there, too.
I thought so, too. And then we're down to... She got a 3.5-star match out of Sky Blue on a Dynamite, which is impressive. You know, Blue, I think, has been improving, but I don't think she had shown anything that would make me think that she was that good on a regular basis. So that is a feather in the cap. But
Sky Blue can put together a 4-star match with the right opponent. I think that's a neutral.
Win.
I don't have every single match I've ever marked down, but Sky Blue is fine. Objectively fine. If you put her with an elite pro wrestler, I bet you could get a 4-star match.
You can. Yeah, I mean, she had
that's one. That's my point. I don't see a 3.5-star match being this feather in the cap for Mercedes Moné, because 3.5.
A little feather, like a pigeon.
That's not saying much, Fred.
Hey, look, I'm trying to be nice here a little bit.
But look, yeah, I have being nice and being honest.
been a little let down by Mercedes Moné in the ring for AEW. So, and I mean, she's still bad at promos. Like every, you know, for her best stuff, I guess this is wild, but her best stuff is this heavily scripted shot like an NXT segment stuff, I guess. Someone's decided that for her. Maybe she's decided it for herself, but it's a bummer because it stinks and I don't like it on Dynamite, but.
What can you do? The last thing I want to mention is I loved, absolutely loved the finish to Ospreay Pack.
I've watched a lot this week.
I think that he did the style. I think it was he got a poison Rana and then he gets behind him, or it's the Styles Clash and then he gets behind him and then he delivers a hidden blade from close range.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And kills him.
Yeah. Just, that was good.
It was like out of nowhere, but I love that they're continuing to establish that the hidden blade can actually finish people instead of just being a setup.
Yeah.
Because the hidden blade is the hidden blade is the coolest move in wrestling.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It used to be the Canadian Destroyer, but it hasn't been cool since Petey Williams is doing it in TNA.
Yeah.
Like everybody does them now. And it's like, look, that used to be the coolest finisher because it was a flippy new pile driver. Nobody had ever attempted something like that.
I mean, look, awesome. I love Dustin Rhodes. This isn't a knock on him, but he probably should not be doing Code Reds or Destroyers, you know, but it's cool, so I'm not going to knock him for it. It's just a little weird, but like I feel like it's incongruous, but I'm not going to rip on the guy for it. It's cool that it's also cool that a 50 however many year old guy is doing that stuff. So,
yeah. Otherwise, Fred, biggest takeaways from Dynamite. We've already kind of touched on a couple things. I liked that Don Callis brought Will Ospreay back specifically because he wanted the tag titles and he knows Ospreay's record in these gauntlet matches.
Yeah. And also emotionally manipulated him by being like, hey, I gave you a favor and you owe me one. That was good. That was very good. I liked that. I liked Ricochet and Guevara looked really good. And I do think, I know Guevara got ripped on some for his performance in the build up to the Four Pillars match, which was underwhelming, but he is a hell of a worker and I'm glad he is back. And, yeah, I actually just earlier this morning, I watched from back in January, I hadn't watched either his match with Powerhouse Hobbs on that Collision or the Battle of the Belts tag match with him and Jericho against Big Bill and Starks because it was supposed to be Omega, but Omega obviously had his appendicitis or diverticulitis issue. And man, Guevara is a great high flyer. He really is. He just does crazy shit and he does it well. And I think he's kind of underrated. Unless you just hate flips and also, I guess, happiness. I thought it was a great match. I thought those two worked really well together. It was a good baby face match. And I think I went like 4.25 on it. I thought it was a blast.
Yeah. I was really impressed with some of the flippy do stuff that they were doing. Look, Ricochet's back, and I think somebody like Guevara is awesome to kind of reestablish that element that Ricochet is Ricochet.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a perfect matchup and a perfect booking decision to, you know, have. I like the whole put together, how they put the whole thing together at the end with Ricochet getting the win. And he's obviously being pushed as the bigger guy right now. And that's not really a knock on Guevara. Guevara is just a tag team champ in Ring of Honor right now. You know, that's not a upper card main roster guy right now.
No.
And then they had the Beast Mortos run in and attack Guevara. And then Ricochet chases him off and the baby faces shake hands. Perfect pro wrestling. That's just this very, very perfectly solid angle all around. And it was good stuff. No, I doubt anyone's going to remember it in a year, you know, as far as like a real key moment or anything, but it was great, you know. Also great, the Outrunners.
Look, I love these guys.
I you know, there's always the concern with meme guys that they're gonna age quickly, you know, in their gimmick. But I think the, you know, and I'm not calling for them to be like the centerpiece of the tag division or anything, but they are hella entertaining.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie. I'm not a big jobbers kind of guy where I think jobbers should get pushed. I think you could push these guys now.
You gotta push them a little bit, you know. They're definitely maybe above like this Brooklyn Brawler, you know, jobber level.
Maybe this is the kind of team where you have them win matches on Rampage and then they lose on Dynamite, but I don't know.
I'd like to see them do a little mini feud with the Bucks for like a month.
They might genuinely have something in these guys.
I think I think they have a little bit of something. It might not be above like mid card level, but like if you got a mid card act that's over, you know, take it.
I also think it could be a situation, Fred, where you have like you said, a mid card act that's over. Well, that was the Acclaimed.
Yeah.
Maybe you have something here. Like, I'm genuinely intrigued long term with what this could be.
They're doing little hype videos for them that are getting good reactions too. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they are local. They're from, I think, OVW. So, you know, that probably helped inflate their reaction some, but I just thought they were tremendously entertaining. So, you know, I hadn't watched a lot of their stuff because I missed a couple collisions. Sorry. I've been working the weekends. Had an event last weekend that had a run, and, you know, these things happen. But I got to tell you, man, they got that vibe right now, you know, and you can't, you know, if you don't mess it up. The thing I would compare it to, and I don't know, you know, it's one of those cases where we never actually got to see what the ceiling was Damian Sandow doing the Mizdow gimmick in WWE like 8 years ago, where he was arguably the most over guy on the show, and he was working his ass off, taking bumps on the outside, mirroring the Miz. And he was 100% committed to it. He was doing a good job with it, but they weren't going to push him, you know, regardless of how over he was, because that's how the company, you know, WWE was at that point in time. And I thought that that's what I would kind of compare it to, just in terms of like, you got this undercard act that probably wasn't slated to go anywhere, but it's definitely overachieving in crowd reactions. So, you know, maybe you just test the, you know, you just, you know, see what you can get out of it. That's how you should book, rather than just being like, no, you're definitely slotted in this spot and there's no way you're ever getting out of it. But you push them and you see if you overextend it. And if you do, you let up. It's easy as that.
Yeah. Well, Fred, I think that's the show.
Yeah. Kind of an abbreviated review of the two. Live Dynamite was a good show, good crowd. It's a shame that they aren't more, you know, popular right now, or successful, or whatever term you prefer. But, you know, hopefully we get they continue to gain popularity and have a better time and blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. So,
AEW, they're going to be fun to watch over the next few months, and very intriguing from also a business perspective, how things are going to shape up. That is our show. Like, comment, subscribe, drop in the Voice of Wrestling Discord and tell us everything that you like or hate about the show. Tell us why I have great hair and why Fred is bad. I can't even think of a funny insult. Just tell me why Fred is bad. We love Fred. Drop in, have a conversation with us. Join people like South Dakota Jones, who continuously send us stuff. Like, we love that kind of interaction.
You can email us, hungiepod, hungeepod at gmail.com. I haven't plugged that in a while. You can give us money. what is it? Red Bubble, right?
Redcircle.com.
Red Circle. God, I'm terrible with this. I got to keep this. I got to just make this a gimmick at this point.
Yeah, pretty much.
Terrible.
We are wonderful people, terrible podcasters. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful day.
See.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.